We're going to continue our studies in the highlights of church history tonight. We have covered about half the course. We've looked at apostolic churches and then the budding of apostasy in the first 700 years and then the rule of the Roman Catholic Church. And look at it pictorially. And first of all, we want to go back just for a few minutes to the budding of apostasy. And we talked about the development of the Catholic Church and the priesthood and the Mass and the confession to the priest. And this is a confessional booth where the person comes and confesses into the ear of his sins, into the ear of the priest. And inside the confessional, I mentioned the little screened window. And I took a picture of that one time. Here, and so the priest is on one side of that screen and the confessor is on the other side speaking into the ear. Auricular confession into the ear. And then we mentioned the host. And when the Mass is accomplished, then that piece of bread is supposed to become Jesus. And it is called the host. And it is put in a little box called the tabernacle, and here is one of those. And when the light is on, then they know that the host is there, and they can pray and worship that host as if it were actually Jesus. And that's the tabernacle. And then they hold it up and carry it around, and the people pray and they worship to that host. Here is Pope Francis, the present Pope, holding up the host in the monstrance. The monstrance is that device he's holding up there, and in the center of it is that little wafer, the host, that they have, priests have consecrated, and they believe that's Jesus. Monstere, Latin, to show. And I wanted to show how we showed how that Mary is actually appears on the cross with Jesus at the Mary Major Church in Rome. And also I wanted to show this church in Chicago, St. Stanisius Costa Church. It's a Polish church, Polish Catholic, right in Chicago, Illinois, one of America's biggest cities. And Mary is on the Ark of God, which was in the tabernacle in the temple. And that's where God dwelt. And inside the ark was the Ten Commandments. And there's Mary being worshipped on the Ark of God in this church. And there's the angels, the cherubim worshipping her. Of course, the cherubim did not look like that. But they're worshipping her, Mary, who is actually taking the place of God. And that is how blasphemous the Catholic teaching is about Mary. Here's the inside of that church. I visited one day to take these photos, and there's the image of Mary up in the front of the church at the altar. We want to look at the rule of the Roman Catholic Church pictorially. About 700 to 1500, the Pope's triple crown that we talked about signified his authority over all the earth, over the kings, over everyone. Triple crown. And they wore that. And that's how they were coronated. And when they were coronated, they used these words, "Receive the threefold crown, and know that thou art the father of princes and kings, the ruler of the round earth, and here below the vicar of Jesus Christ." And you can see that it is made of silver and gold and precious stones, which is how the harlot religion in Revelation 17 is described, decked with gold and precious stones. That is certainly not the simple New Testament churches we see in the Bible. Peter said he didn't have any silver or gold, but the Pope has plenty. And that triple crown appears on the coat of arms. The Pope's coat of arms is made up of the triple crown and the keys. They say that Jesus gave Peter the keys to heaven and hell, and then the popes sit on Peter's throne, and they also have that authority. And this is the Pope's crown still today. And here's Pope John the 23rd wearing the tiara. He's the one that opened up Vatican II Council in the 1960s when the Roman Catholic Church made some great changes and started becoming ecumenical. He was the opening pope. He died, and then another pope completed it. Here's the papal crown on the statue of Peter in St. Peter's Cathedral. I don't know why Peter's black. He wasn't black, wasn't white either. He was Jewish, Middle Eastern. Pope Leo the 13th is being carried around in the throne, and he's got his crown, his threefold crown, and his fans. And there's Pope Paul the 6th, who ruled from 1963 to 1978. And here he is carrying around him in the throne as Peter's throne, supposedly, and he's wearing that crown as the ruler of the world. Suleiman the Magnificent, the Muslim ruler, he wanted to outdo the Pope, so he had a four crown made to outdo the popes. He ruled the Ottoman Empire from 1520 to 1566. There's a model of his crown, trying to outdo the popes. And of course, the only one that's going to actually be crowned the ruler of the world is Christ when he comes, and he will deserve it. The popes have had palaces. This is the Pope's Lateran Palace in Rome in old times. And today, that palace is still there, and that's where they keep Peter's throne. And on the front, and it's also a church, but on the front of that palace and that church, it says, Most Holy Lateran Church, Mother and Mistress of all churches of the world. And that's what Rome has always claimed, that Rome is the head of all churches. And we talked about the Unum Sanctum of 1302, Pope Boniface claiming that nobody could be saved who does not submit to the Pope. And that's the kind of power that they claimed. And they have never renounced that. And we saw how that they ruled over emperors and kings, such as Henry IV, Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire. And he did things that the Pope did not like, and so the Pope made a decree that he could not be the emperor anymore, and people did not have to submit to him. And so the emperor wanted to make things right with the Pope, and he came to the palace where the Pope was staying to ask forgiveness, and the Pope made him stay outside for 3 days in the winter, waiting. And then finally he let the emperor in to bow down and get forgiveness. And that is the power that the popes had through that time. The Pope has his own little army. It's called the Vatican Swiss Guard. And they still dress in the ancient garb with the old-fashioned helmets. But they are warriors. And they have their own stamps. Vatican is a little city. It's a little country. They have their own stamps, and they have their own coins. Here's a Vatican gold coin, and here we see the triple crown and the keys. And Charlemagne, crowned by Pope Leo III in 800 as the first ruler of the Holy Roman Empire, so it was, a Catholic empire covering a large part of Europe for hundreds of years. The authority came from the Pope. And here it is, covering most of Central Europe. And in AD 500, this is what Europe looked like in AD 500. And it was mostly idolatrous tribes, and they were eventually replaced with Catholic nations. They were Christianized. Most of them were forced to be Catholics. But Europe became Roman Catholic largely. Here is what, by the 12th century, so 700 years later, this is what Europe looked like. Almost all Roman Catholic or Eastern Orthodox. We saw how in 1054, the two parts of the Roman Catholic Church broke apart. Roman Catholic in the West and the Eastern Orthodox in the East, headquartered in Constantinople. And so, but it's all Catholic basically by 12th century, 1100s. And that's a great change that came into Europe, and that made the preparation for modern Europe built on this foundation. It's impossible to understand history or understand the present without understanding history. And here's the crown of the Holy Roman Emperor in a museum today. It was a continuation of the Roman Empire, just like Bible prophecy said. And it created the modern Europe. And we see the cross signifying that it is Christian kingdom. And we see the gold and the jewels and all these things that are prophesied in Revelation. And Charlemagne had crusades to conquer the pagan people and force them to be Catholics. And he did that to the Saxons up north. The Saxons, before that, had conquered most of England and joined with the Angle people, and they were the Anglo-Saxons, and that is what created modern England. And the English language, the Anglo-Saxon language, became the English language. But Charlemagne conquered the Saxons in northern Europe, and so here's what it looked like. And they were up there, and over to the left, we see the Angles and the Saxons over in England at that time. And they were preparing the way for modern English and modern England. But Charlemagne went up there and fought them with his armies and defeated them. But before that, the Angles and the Jutes and the Saxons had gone over, invaded England, captured a large part of it, and created the Anglo-Saxon civilization and language, the English language. But Charlemagne defeated the Saxons up in northern Europe. Here is the Saxon ruler, Wicekind, surrendering to Charlemagne in 785. And we see the cross there, and we see the Catholic bishops there at that ceremony. So they were surrendering to Christianity, so-called. And then the Franks on the west and the Holy Roman Empire on the east kept the Muslims from coming in and conquering Europe, which was very important. Otherwise, there would be no Protestant Reformation, no Baptist, no Christian England, no America as we know it, if the Muslims controlled all of Europe. But they were stopped. They were stopped at the Battle of Tours in 732 over in France by the Franks, and they were stopped at the Battle of Vienna in 1683 by the Roman Empire, their armies. And then Napoleon tried to reestablish the Roman Empire early 1800s and established a big kingdom for a short time. He thought of himself as the Caesar, and he had statues made of himself looking like the Caesar, the way the old Caesars appeared, and he made a painting of himself. He's looking like Julius Caesar on the horse, conquering Caesar. That's what he thought of himself of. And then Hitler came along in the 1930s and 40s, and he established a kingdom called the Third Reich. And he wanted to be the new Caesar. He used the old Caesar emblem of the eagle. And then the Vatican, which is the Pope's headquarters in Rome, St. Peter's Cathedral, there with the big dome, St. Peter's Square out in front, it's where the Pope speaks, the Vatican Palace, this is another one of the Pope's palaces, is on the right there. And this is a gold coach that belonged to Pope Clement XI in the 1700s. Gold. And St. Peter's Basilica. The dome is the highest in the world. Rises up to 448 feet. And you can climb up there and get on the roof of that building, but it's supposedly built over the tomb of Peter. But there's no evidence that Peter ever was in Rome. Paul wrote to the church at Rome, and he did not mention Peter, and that would not have been right if Peter was there and the head of the church and the Pope. Peter was not in Rome. Of course, Peter was not a Pope. But the words inscribed on that dome are the words from Matthew 16, "Thou art Peter, and upon this rock I will build my church. I will give unto thee the keys of the kingdom of heaven." And they believe that that belongs to the popes. And inside there is built over Peter's tomb, supposedly, is the high altar. Magnificent structure. The largest bronze sculpture in the world. It's an amazing piece of artwork. And then inside there is St. Peter's chair, supposedly. And St. Peter's statue. Here he is with his keys. People come and they kiss the foot of that statue to get the blessing. The Vatican Library is one of the most amazing libraries in the world. It holds great treasures, invaluable books. And then they have the pilgrimages to the so-called holy places where they believe that they can get special blessing and salvation by going to these places, especially places pertaining to Mary. And places that supposedly Mary has appeared to people. And this is one of the most famous ones in France. Big crowds of people come there. And Mary is depicted as the Queen of Heaven. The Queen of Heaven. And they give money to try to purchase blessing there. At these places. And in these ways, the Roman Catholic Church has gotten very wealthy over the centuries. This book describes the wealth of the Roman Catholic Church. Avro Manhattan, he is a Roman Catholic, but he is describing the wealth of the Roman Catholic Church. They've been enriched by the doctrine of purgatory and the masses for the dead. And if you believe that your loved one is in purgatory, suffering, and you can pay money and get the popes to say a mass to help them, then of course you would want to do that. And countless amounts of money have been paid for the masses for the dead. And Rome has been enriched by the indulgences. And that is what caused Martin Luther to finally start rebelling against the Roman Catholic Church as a monk. And these indulgences promise forgiveness of sins, and you can get out of purgatory by paying money. And in Luther's day, the Johann Tetzel came around Luther's territory and sold these indulgences so the Pope could build his cathedral over in Rome. It cost a lot of money. And so they were raising money by selling these indulgences. And Tetzel would say to the people, "When a penny in the coffer rings, a soul from purgatory springs." And so Luther rejected that and protested against that. And it became the beginning of the Protestant Reformation in the 1500s. But much of the money for the building of this great basilica came from the sale of indulgences. And then monasteries, and the monastic system, and the desert fathers. And they built these monasteries, and they went out into the caves, and they lived in the caves, and they fasted, and they abused themselves, and did not marry, and tried to get salvation and godliness by this method, by works. And here's a monastery in Israel, on the way from Jerusalem to Jericho, as we've walked that way different times, right out in the middle of nowhere. And that's a big canyon that runs from Jerusalem to Jericho. And this is looking down toward Jericho, through the Judean hills. And there's that monastery out there. It's amazing they could build such a thing. But they did. And this is just one of many. They built all over the desert places especially. And before that, these monks lived up there in these caves, isolated, trying to get salvation. Inside are the bones and relics of the dead monks. The body of John Jacob, he's one of the founders. And his body is there, so you can get blessing by being near the body. Here's the head of the man. And so today, as we've said, these practices are becoming popular all across Christianity, every branch, including Baptist. Many Southern Baptist churches are using these things that come from the Roman Catholic Church. And here's Christianity today describing how this is happening, the lost secrets of the ancient church. Well, the ancient church is a Roman Catholic they're talking about. And such things as centering prayer. And you try to get rid of all your thoughts. It's yoga. It's like Hinduism. And you chant and meditate and you try to get rid of your thoughts. And then they believe that God will speak to you in that silent, empty place. It's very dangerous. Richard Foster is one of the big teachers of that. He's dead now, but his books are very popular, very influential, spreading this among all kinds of Christians. And he said the goal of this kind of praying is union with God, where we see nothing. Well, that's not biblical prayer, obviously. And Christian bookstores these days are full of these kinds of books from the Roman Catholic Church and these Catholic mystics, St. Francis, Teresa of Avila. But these were not saved people. They believed in salvation by works. They believed in salvation through baptism and the Mass. They believed in Mary as the Queen of Heaven. They were not saved people. But yet these evangelical leaders today are following them. Most of these evangelical leaders today are following them. And these are just a few. The biggest names in the Christian world today, such as Charles Stanley. He's Southern Baptist, very popular. But he promotes this old Roman Catholic kind of mysticism. He says, "Find a silent place, do nothing, but make yourself available to the Lord. Just sit there and don't think and don't do anything. Simply invite Him to meet with you in the stillness and speak to you. Sense His presence, experience it. And so it's all about an experience. It's not about thinking. It's the very opposite of what we see in the Bible, which is to meditate and have your thoughts filled with the Word of God, praying conscious thoughts to God. There's none of this in the Bible. This is very dangerous. And so this is building the ecumenical movement. It's drawing every kind of Christian together with the Roman Catholic Church. And then it's drawing them together with Hinduism and Buddhism. It is very, very dangerous. It's preparing the way for the Antichrist, no doubt. And then we saw how that the Roman Catholic Church is becoming ecumenical since the 1960s. And here in 1965, Pope Paul VI and the Orthodox Patriarch lifted the excommunications of 1054. But they're still divided. And yet there's this ecumenical attempt to draw everything together. And of course, it is building this, the one world church that will prepare for the Antichrist.